Let's start with trying to figure out how long is Bein HaShemashos. So let's start again. Start at the top of the page. Lamed Aleph Beis. We're going to go through it pretty quickly until we get up to where we are. Tana Rabbanan Bein HaShemashos Safek Min Hayom Min HaLaila. Safek Kula Min Hayom, Safek Kula Min HaLaila. There are three possibilities. Either it's partially Yom, partially Laila. Either it's totally Yom, or it's totally Laila. So you have to give it the Chumrah of both days. Ezer Bein HaShemashos. When is Bein HaShemashos? Meshet Tishka Chama. Sun goes down. Kozman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adin. As long as the face of the east is red. Hichsif Tachdom, Hichsif Elyon, Bein HaShemashos. If the bottom is black and the top is not black, it's still Bein HaShemashos. Hichsif Elyon, Vishvul Tachdom. If the top gets black like the bottom, Zeo Lailo. That's very nice. Tiv Reb Yehuda. Reb Nechemi Omer Kedei Shehalach Odom Mishetishka Chama Chotzi Mil. When the sun sets, you give half a mil. Reb Yossi Omer. Bein HaShemashos Keherif Ayin. It's a blink of an eyelash. Zeh Nichnes V'zeh Yotzeh. Night comes in, day goes out. So if you have Shalom with Olav, it's not clear when it is. Amma, we said, Matilim Oto L'chom M'shnei Yomim. L'mai Hilchusa Amma Afunav Reda V'yishul Inyin Tumah. K'disnan Rosh Shnei Yomim Bein HaShemashos. If you saw two Bein HaShemashos, Safik L'tumah V'l'kob. Yom Echad Bein HaShemashos, Safek V'tum. Now the Gemara says, a Gufa Kasha. Amata Ezer Bein HaShemashos, Mishetishka Chama, Kozman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimen. So it means that the sky is red. Ha'hichsev Tachton Lichsev Elyon Laila. If the sky would turn black, even on the bottom, it would be Laila. Ha'datana, then it says, in Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Hichsev Tachton V'loi Hichsev Elyon Bein HaShemashos. No, it's Bein HaShemashos. So what is it? How do you figure out the red sky versus the dark sky? I'm a rabba. I'm a vidam Shmuel Korach Vatani. Rabba said like this: Ezer Bein HaShemashos, Mishatishka Chama Kolzman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimin. Ve Hichsev Hatachton Ve Hichsev Elyon Nami Bein HaShemashos. So Bein HaShemashos, according to Rabba, begins when the sun sets, and then the sky is red, but the sun has gone down. And it lasts until the whole sky, until the middle, is black. Even if the bottom turns black, it's not yet night until the top also turns black. Hichsev Elyon v'hishvul Tachton Laila. Rav Yosef Amar Rav Yudah Mishmuel Hachitoni. Mishetishka Chama Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimin is Yom. He says if the sun goes down but it's still red in the sky, it's day. Hechsev Tachton, Hechsev Elyon, Bein HaShemashos. If it's black on the bottom and not on top, that's Bein HaShemashos. Safik. Hechsev Elyon, Hishvul Tachton, Laila. So Rav Yosef says that there's a certain period after sunset where the sky is red, it's still called day. It doesn't become Bein HaShemashos until the sky on the horizon turns black. Now, Ba'odel Tamay, this is what they said someplace else. Didn't we have a brisa? Shia Bein HaShemashos B'chama. How long is Bein HaShemashos? Omer Rabba, Omer Yudah Mishmuel, Shlosha Chelkei Mil. Three parts of a mil. My Gimel Chelkei Mil. What does it mean, three parts of a mil? Hilei Matalza Palgei Mil, three times a half of a mil. Name a mil Umechza. Should have said 1.5 mil. Ella Tulsa Tilsei Mila, three times a third of a mil. Name a mil, you should have said a mil. So what does it mean? Three chelke mil. Ella tolsa rive mil. Three quarters of a mil. When Rabba says that Bein HaShemashos is three parts of a mil, how many? Three, what kind of parts? He means three quarters. Three quarters of a mil. Now a mil, the poskim says 18 minutes. So how much is three quarters of 18 minutes?
13 and a half.
So here's Banish Mus is 13 and a half. Four into 3/4 times 18.
It's until 13 and a half minutes before the sun goes down, yes?
After the sun goes down, 13 and a half minutes. We have Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yosef says, Shnei Chelke Mil, two parts of a mil. It's a little less time. We'll soon see. My Shnei Chelke Mil, what does it mean, two parts of a mil? Ilay Matre Palga, two halves of a mil. Lema Mil, he should have just said a mil. Ela Tre River Mil, or 2/4 of a mil. Lema Chotzi Mil, he should have said half a mil. Ela Tre Tilsay Mil, 2/3 of a mil. So Rabbi says that Bein HaShemashot is 3/4 of a mil, and Rav Yosef says Bein HaShemashot is 2/3 of a mil. Huh?
12.
So what, 3/4 is how many twelfths? You compare 3/4 and 2/3 is 9/12. And 2/3 is how many twelfths? 8/12. So it means that Rabbah has 1/12 more Bein HaShemashot than Rav Yosef. Why is that so? Because Rabbah said that Bein HaShemashot begins when the sun goes down and the sky turns red, it's Bein HaShemashot right away. Rav Yosef says, no, that's still day. It first becomes Bein HaShemashot when the sky and the horizon turns black, begins to turn black. So apparently 1/12 of a mil is it takes it for the sky to turn from red to black at the horizon. On the other side. So what? How much is 1/12 of a mil? How much time is that? 18 minutes divided by 12 is a minute and a half. Minute and a half. Means according to Rabbi Yosef, according to Rabba, who starts it right away, Bein HaShemashot begins when the sun sets. It lasts for 13 and a half minutes. And according to Rabbi Yosef, a minute and a half after sunset is still day, and then you have 12 minutes Bein HaShemashot. 2/3 of a mil. So there are two shitas. Rabbah has Bein HaShemashot for 13 and a half minutes after sunset, and Rav Yosef has it for 12 minutes. The first minute and a half he considers day. Palga de Danka. Ika benay palga de Danka. The difference between them is a half of a sixth. Danka is a sixth. One half of a sixth. In other words, 1/12 of a mil is the difference. According to Rabba, it's 9/12 of a mil, Bein HaShemashot. And according to Rabbi Yosef, Bein HaShemashot is 8/12 of a mil. The difference between them is 1/12. It's 1/12 means a minute and a half. Okay. V'chilufa b'chalsa. And they reverse their positions when it comes to chalsa. What is chalsa? Chalsa is a kaveris, is a beehive. A marabba like this. Chalsa bas tre kure shari le taltule. Bas talsa kure also taltule. Rule is like this. The rule is, on Shabbos, you're allowed to carry a keli, let's say a basket, a pot. These things are mukhan, it's not mukhsa. However, if things are very big, let's say a refrigerator, stove, or whatever, a bathtub, something very big, a big chest, so it's big and heavy, it's not, people don't move it around, it sits in one space all the time, it doesn't have wheels, let's say, it's not made to move around, let's say a big chest, it's Muktzan Shabbos, it's a keli, which is called a keli sha'asui lenachas. A keli which is sitting in a place like a chest full of clothing. It's mukhsa on Shabbos because only kelim which are permitted to move on Shabbos are kelim ha'asuyim l'talta. A keli ha'asuyim l'nachas is too big. It sits in one place. It's not a mukhan. What is it? It's mukhsa. It's not something people move around on Shabbos. It becomes mukhsa. Yes.
Opening that chest though is not.
No, you can open the chest, but you can't move it around. So now we're talking about there's a beehive. The beehive is made out of twigs. Whatever they make the hive. Sometimes they have huge hives. Now people like to take the empty after they clear out the bees and get rid of the dvash. So they have this big basket, and the people use it as a keli. But if it's very big, it sits in one place. So how big is big that it's not a metaltel? So it's a machlokas. Rabbi said, bas trei kuri. If it's so big, you can put two kurim. Kurim is like a big amount of food. It's a certain measure. Shari, it's permitted a taltel. Bas talta kuri, if it's so big, you put three kurim. A kur is a huge amount of grain. If it's so big for three kurim, it's already like a vat or a huge container. Asula taltule. You can't move it around. Why can't you move it around? The kele asula nachas. A kele is not made for moving. It's a huge container. So how does he? What's his line? Two is permitted. Three is asul. Rav Yosef Omar, batalsa kuri namishari. Even the size of three kurim is also permitted. Such a big container, but bas abba kuri asul. If it's the size of four kurim, it's usher to move around. So here in this case, who says the smaller number is usher? Rabba. And who says the bigger number is usher? Rav Yosef. And what did they say by Bein HaShemashes? The opposite. In Bein HaShemashes, Rabba had the bigger number for Bein HaShemashes, and Rav Yosef had the smaller number. That's what the Gemara says, Chilufa. They switch. In Bein HaShemashes, Rabba has a bigger number. It's just a question of memorizing. How do we remember a machlokas? So Rabba and Bein HaShemashes has a larger number. He has 13 and a half minutes, 3/4 of a mil. And Rav Yosef has only 2/3 of a mil, 12 minutes. And it comes to the question of the chalsa, of this big chest. Rabba says a smaller number is as asa, only even three. And Rav Yosef says if it's the size of four, it's asa. Yes?
When it says 2/4 or 3/4, right? So when it says 2, it means up to 2, or you go up to 2.99, right? How much is it?
It seems from the Gemara that 2.99
will still be fine.
Will be okay. Only hit 3 is awesome.
So that's
yeah, it seems like that. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the logic behind basket's too big? It's usher versus if it's small enough.
Because a keli is not muktzah because kelim are moved around, pots and pans, chairs, but things which just sit in one place like a big chest. Has no hachana for Shabbos.
So one assumes that that's one of the mercies of the movie. It's obvious. You can't move it. It's gigantic. You can't move it in the first place. It's just one to say.
Apparently, they want to give a size, a certain size.
So Gemara's assuming that it's 3/4, it's too big to be moved.
Yeah, but so
two
right.
And three seems very close. I mean,
a core is a big. A core is very big. A core is a huge amount of measure. A core. A core is many bushels, so it's a big. I have to look it up in the book of Jewish measurements. But
so again, the issue is that if it's too big, it's the law considered a kli.
Right, for Shabbos, for Hilchas Muktzah, it's not a kli.
So if I have a pot that's like, you know, they use an army that's gigantic,
It sits in one place. Anything which sits in one place, a refrigerator,
so
a stove, a chest. No,
so
we're talking about in Shabbos. The Hilchos Muktzah of Shabbos.
I'm saying so.
It's a special din in Shabbos. There's only one other place where it makes a difference also. The difference also in Tumah. In Tumah there's a rule that Kli Eitz, a wooden keli, Ha'asir L'Nachas, is not Makabel Tumah.
So you want to say that a gigantic pot is considered a kli, yet it's not considered a kli in terms of din Muktzah?
Because if something sits in one place the whole week, well, in this room we don't have anything like that. Even this desk, they move around. But let's say this desk would never be moved around.
Okay.
It would not. Then on Shabbos, I would be muktzah. I can't move it because it's not davar
mitaltel. So that's not really an issue of the size; it's an issue of its movement.
Right.
So how do you think you say that an object that moves regularly should be moved?
Yeah.
Even if it's half a core, you should move it.
Right. But apparently
the
issue
of the movement.
But apparently this chest is like a borderline case. It's not so clear. So based on the measurements, they want to tell you yes or no.
He found those measurements.
It says here, of course, 30 sail, which could be 248 liters or 432 liters. That's a lot. A liter is usually 1 kilogram.
Okay, so how many liters does it say is a core? 30 sa.
30
sa. And each sa is 2.5 liters?
No, 248.
248 liters.
30 sa is 248, or they say
248 liters. That's huge.
That's
huge. A liter is more is a little less than a quart, right? A liter.
So this thing.
Yeah. So 248 is huge. It's
one
huge. Each one core.
Yeah.
So about two cores is double. Three cores triple. Four cores quadruple. So it's like 1,000 liters.
Okay.
It's a huge, huge vat. It's a huge vat which
yeah,
put 1,000 liters.
You have to tell somebody to not to move it. But I'm not saying, guys, don't move your house. I don't need to be serious. Be serious. I mean, if something's that gigantic, can we move?
No, you get Uber.
You get 10 guys.
Yeah.
But why did Gemara? I don't know. The Gemara doesn't explain.
You say your house. No, plus 10 guys.
It's a huge container. We're talking about containers,
house,
which you could push it, but people don't.
At
what size do we make that determination that it's not usually moved around? So he wants to give different sizes, either 700 liters of volume or 1,000 liters of volume.
If it's on wheels, like in Israel, living those big containers.
If it's on wheels, it can move around a huge thing.
Yeah, these things are not on wheels. If they're on wheels, then it could be very big. But it's not on wheels. It's a big container, and you can put 1,000 liters into it, or 700 liters. Three cores is, I'd say, 750 liters. Four cores is 1,000 liters. These are very big things. And my focus is, at what point do I say that they're not moved around? People don't move it around.
So settlers who live in containers, like...
Right, the containers
kind of
look...
Don't be serious. So they can't like, move that around or something.
Right.
It doesn't say that it's full.
No, it's empty.
Yeah, so
these things are empty.
So it's easier to move. Right. It's a more realistic term.
Right. It's empty. Right. Right. If they're full, no one can move it. 1,000 liters, no one can move that without wheels. Yes, y'all. A tall is about 250 liters, he says. Only things which have wheels. If they have wheels, it's made to be moved around. But if it doesn't have wheels, you're not allowed to move. Only with wheels. If it doesn't have wheels, it's very big. It might be so big that it can't move it. They don't have to take a look if it's so big.
It's muksa, right?
It becomes muksa because it's something people don't move around.
Ah, but what if it is?
Maybe it's like bigger.
Well, if you know for a fact that it doesn't, listen, I have a chest in my bedroom where I put clothing. This chest I only move once a year when I clean for Pesach. So it's every Shabbos it's muktzah. I can't move it around on Shabbos because it's something which is made for nachas, to sit in one place. Beds have wheels. Once there's a wheel, it's made to be moved around. People move beds every day. When they make their beds, they move it around. They have wheels. Then the muktzah.
Really? So
unless you move it every day. Do you move that bed every day when you make your bed? If you do, then it's not muktzah. It's made for talta. But if that bed sits in the same place for 6 months, then all of a sudden, one shot, but you decide you want to move it.
Sometimes
it's not made for moving.
Sometimes it's not for moving. You have to move it a lot. Let's say the closet next to the bed. So if you have to go here. Yeah,
you have to have most beds, in my opinion, are movable things. People move beds around every day because they want to make their beds. So I personally would say that a bed is a keli, which is the talta. It's a movable keli. But a chest, no. Yes.
But a table,
that's one second.
With the size of a painting on a wall. It's also not just in one place.
Painting on a wall is not made with talta. That's a good point. That could be this muktzah. Could be. It's not made with talta. It's made to sit on the wall. I think it's an interesting point that you made there. Huh? It should be muktzah. It's not made for tiltul. It's made to sit in one place. That it's muktzah? I made the talta. I made the take on and off. Okay. Yes.
But let's say you're having your Shabbos meal, like all of a sudden, like 12 people show up and eat a meal, right? So you want to, so you want to move the table from the kitchen to the dining room, whatever. But you don't really move the table from the kitchen. Are you allowed to do that or not?
My opinion is that kitchen tables are always being moved around. When she washes the floors, the wife in the house, she's going to move the table.
What about like the table?
She washes
like
the floors every day, twice or three times.
What about like a spare table? I don't know, like in you have it like in a closet or in the garage or something.
I think it's for the Talmud. It's made for being in and out. It's always only I consider clothing chests mukzah. Because those clothing chests sit there for 6 months, 10 months, no one touches them, so that's mukzah.
Okay.
It's not made for tiltul.
Stuff like that, okay.
A painting is a good question.
We had this case, the Shabbos, as by somebody, to get this cabinet farther away from the kids, so they didn't knock, so they didn't break it. They moved it out of the way of the table. It was a small cabinet.
Which is usually not moved. They never move it.
Rarely.
Shabbos, moving mukzah.
Is this something like for owning Shabbos?
Well, you allowed to move mukzah for owning Shabbos?
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know whether you allowed to move mukzah for owning Shabbos.
Ben Boss, you might be able to know.
Anyway, you have to ask a child such a
case.
Okay, Rabotai, this is this little, okay, fine. Amar Baye said, Boy Minei Demar, I asked my Rebbe, his Rebbe was Rabba, B'Shas Maisa. It was a practical question. I had this container made from, I guess, from a beehive, and I wanted to know if I could move it. He didn't even allow me to move it when it was the size of 2 kuri. Even at the level of 500 liters, he said no. I mean, all of a sudden, Rabbi became very strict. Because Rabbi himself said, 3 is usa. When it came, practically speaking, Rabbi told Abaye, even 2, no. Kaman, who is that? Kahai Tana. There's a different Tana. This Nan says in the Mishnah, this is where he's talking about Tumah. This is talking about Tumah. So he told that Kli 8, wooden Kalim, if they're made Latal Tail, to move around, they can come Tameh, you can make them Tameh, but if they're Aser L'Nachas, like a wooden chest, sits in one place, even if you touch it with a dead sheretz or a dead body, it's Tor, because a Keli Eitz has to be L'Taltel. If it's L'Nachas, it's Tor. So what happened? It says in this Mishnah, Kaveres HaKash, there's a beehive made from Kash, straw, Kaveres Kanim, made from twigs, Bosphine Alexandris, or there's a water, Rashi says there's a water vat. There's a vat on a boat, and the boat needs fresh water, boat from Alexandria. So they used to have big containers of water, but they kept the water in wooden containers.
These are all man-made containers.
Apple Pish Yeshlem Shilayim, even if there's a bottom, in other words, there's a full container, there's a bottom, there's a side. Vehein machzikas mem saw balach. If they have 40 saw lach is huge, right? 40 times 230 liters. Shehein kurayim biyavish. 40 saw lach liquid equals kurayim yavish. Tahor, it's tahor. So you see, Tukurayim is already not a movable thing. What did they say then in the article? How does 40 Solach become Tukurayim Yavesh? What does it say? Read it out loud.
Okay,
what does the note say in the bottom?
The note says, in order for a wooden or reed container be biblically acceptable to Tumah, it must be something that can transport whether full or empty, or otherwise was not considered a utensil with respect to Tumah. The above cited mission teaches that the container that has liquid volume of 40 cell, which is the same being able to hold 2 core, is of solid. It's considered too large to be transported when full, and thus is not considered a utensil with relation to Tumah. Remark assumes that the criteria classifying items as a utensil are the same for Tumah and Shabbos law. Thus, this Tana statement is the source of Rabbah's contention that even 2 core containers are considered mukzah on Shabbos.
Okay.
Are we talking about volumes for both?
Volume.
But wet and dry volume should be the same, no?
Rashi says no. Rashi says, look at the Rashi. Shehein Kurayim. If it's liquid, ain't bugodesh. It doesn't have any mound. It's flat. If you put liquid into a container, it lies there flat. Shehen karayim shishim sa biyavish becomes 60 sa. In other words, 40 sa lach is 60 sa yavish. Why? Shehen gadesh machzik shlish bekelim shalehem. Shehen gadesh machzik shlish bekelim shalehem. It was like this. If you put liquid into a container, let's say it's 40 saw of liquid. It's very big, like a mikveh. But okay, it's a lot of wood. Then let's say the mikveh is empty, you want to put in solids. You're going to have to put in 60 saw volume to get the equivalent, because there's air space. Between the pieces you put in, there's space.
Solids.
And then when you pile up solids, right? You pile up solids. There's space. It's not space. So therefore, you need 60 saw solid
to equal
40 saw liquid
really
in terms of the same amount of
material
volume, but it's because of the way things lie and airspace and so on. So you have to put 60 saw solid to get 40 saw liquid. In other words, you have to add one third.
Where
would
you see that in Rashi?
Rashi says that. Let's read the Rashi inside. Lach ain bogodesh. Lach doesn't have any space or any piling up. It doesn't pile up because lach is flat. Shehein karayin shishim saw biyavish. It's 60 saw of dry things. Shehagodesh, the pile up machzik shlish. Has a third. The kalim shalahem shayasuyim kiyam sha'asa shlomo gofan kachatzi rochvan vehein agulim. And Rashi explains how these things look, these containers. But in any event, Rashi says when you want to get an equivalent solid pile to equal a liquid amount, you have to add a third more to the solid because of the way the solid gets piled up. There's a lot of space which is being used up. So it's one third more space.
Only this utensil.
Huh?
Only this kind of utensil, not anything else.
Right, this utensil.
What about like cement or something?
Not cement. He's talking about piling up pieces of things, racks, stuff like that. Alright.
Not necessarily. Solid is a solid. He doesn't say what kind of. We're not talking about.
Well, he's speaking about some kind of a pileup. So I don't know. I agree. It's not so clear. Exactly what it is. It's not clear. It's not so clear. Exactly how you do this. This conversion. It's a conversion between liquid measures and solid measures. So he says the conversion is one third. You have to add one third to the solid measure. That's an equivalent amount of the material of. I don't know. Okay. Omar Abaye. Abaye says, Shmamino hai gutcha tiltami. This proves that you go from liquid to solid, and you're talking about a pileup, it's one third. Okay, fine. Alright, this was like a little detour. Now we have to go back to Benish Moshes. Abaye chazia l'rova the kodobi l'mariv. Abaye saw that Rava, when the sun went down, was looking at the west. What side of the sky does the sun go down?
West.
On the west. Came sunset. Rava was trying to figure out, I guess, Ben Hashmashos. He was looking at the sky in the west. Amalei, Rabbi says, wait a second. V'hasanya kozman shipnei mizrach madinin. The Braisa, which deals with Ben Hashmashos, speaks about looking at the eastern sky, whether the eastern horizon is red. Why are you looking at the west? The main thing to look at is the east. Because the Braisa said the eastern sky is red. It's either day or it's Ben Hashmashos, and that's where it turns black, it becomes night. But you're supposed to look at the east, not the west. Amalei, the both are you going to have to help me out now. Amalei, so he answers, Mi Savat Pnei Mizrach Mamish. Do you read that that Braisa means really the east? Lo. Panim hama'adinim es ha-mizra. It means the face which makes the east red. What does that mean?
What?
Meaning the west, right? The sun setting in the west. The
what makes the east red? The west makes the east red.
Yeah.
The west.
The sun.
The one that makes
the
east red.
The source.
Right.
The sun is in the west. The sun makes.
The sun is making the east red. So Rashi. Panim hamadinim es hamizrach. Let's see the Rashi. Davi. Mabit erev Shabbos. Liroshim yeshom adhumum eschama. He looked erev Shabbos to see this and the redness of the sun. Panim hamadinim es hamizrach. La erev in the evening, chama shakas b'marav. The sun goes down in the west. V'zaharu rei hachama, and the sun's rays, ma'adimin es hamizrach, make the east red. Kechalon, like a window. Keshachama nechnes hezba, when the sun shines through the window, ma'ademet kotel shekenegda. It makes the wall on the other side red. Or yellow, whatever. It creates a... If a sun is shining through the window, that wall will have some sunshine on it. So the same way the sun shines in the west, makes the east red.
Just look at the west.
So why do you look at the west?
Because one looking east, look at the west, same thing, it doesn't matter.
So what? So he'd rather look at the east than the west. The Bryce spoke about the west, but the west is getting its sunshine or light from the east. No, the east is getting its sunshine from the west. So really, he says, let me look at the west. That's the real source. Even though the simanim on the sinim itself of the braisa is on the east, but it really means it's coming from the west. What does our scroll say in the bottom of it?
13, it says, for sure that after sundown, the residual rays of the sun are strong enough not only red in the western sky where the sun has set, but also filter through the cause of reddish glow in eastern, east at the wall. As Rashi puts it, process is akin to sunlight passing through a window and illuminating the opposite wall of the house.
Okay, so this is what Rashi says. So halacha lemaisa, where do we look, at the west or the east?
West.
What do you see in the west?
The sun
went down. When will you know when it turns from Benish Moshe's tonight? When the east turns black. So you look at the west, but really you're looking at the east too.
Maybe it's because it's easier to differentiate by the east, because you're looking more up right than you're looking down. Meaning, but if you when you look at the east, you're seeing what's going black.
Going black. The east is turning black.
Whereas if you're looking at the west, it's going down. It's going.
No, it's getting less and less light, but it's still light. It's going to be light in the west even after it turns into Tzeisa Kochavim.
Mm-hmm.
So to look at the west, I guess a real expert. Yes, what else?
Maharam says, explains further, Baba looked to the west because atmospheric disturbances, clouds and haze could make the fainter redness of the eastern sky difficult to judge. Thus, a more reliable way to judge the situation was to determine whether the redness in the western part of the sky was still brilliant enough to cause some redness on the opposite horizon as well.
Okay, that's very good. That the Maharam explained. In other words, looking at the east, which is what the Braisa says, and that's really where the determinant is, on the east, sometimes can be tricky because it's turning black and maybe clouds are making it look even blacker than it should. But if you look at the west, you have the real sun. At least the strong sun brightness is on the west, because that's where the sun set. So if you're an expert, you can tell in the brightness of the sky in the west, it's bright. It's not going to be black. But at certain points of its brightness, you know that it's already night, because you know that then it's really black in the east. So an expert like Rabba could look at the west, even though really the determinant is what's going on in the east, but he could tell from the west. Now, we today have computer programs where they say it's a certain amount of degrees of latitude below the horizon. That's whatever, 13 minutes or the 12 minutes. Based the question is, well, this is getting into this question. You see, the Gemara started off with looking at the sky. looking at the colors in the sky. East, maybe west, but look at colors in the sky and you figure out Pepe Nashmashus and Laila. But meanwhile, we also had another Gemara that the Gemara translated those colors into time. Because it said it's either 3/4 of a mil or 2/3 of a mil. It's either 13 minutes, 13 and a half minutes, or 12 minutes. So, what about America? This is an Eretz Yisrael. You have to assume that the plain Gemara discussion is about Eretz Yisrael. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, 13 minutes, 13 and a half minutes after sunset, the sun is at some point, the earth has revolved a little bit, so we know how many degrees below the horizon is the sun. We come to America, it's a different latitude. So, a different latitude, is it going to be 13 and a half and 12 minutes like in Eretz Yisrael, or are we going to look again at the shades of light in the sky and come up with a different a different number, a different amount of minutes for Bein Hashmashos? So, yeah, redness is good if you have a clear night where there's no clouds, as the Maharal points out. The moment you start getting clouds in the sky, you're going to have problems with the redness, the blackness.
The same everywhere you go, I think that changes.
It changes,
so you can't use
based
time
on latitude.
So you can't use the time.
So they say like this, that in America is more north than Israel.
Yeah,
New York
depends,
City.
Like it depends. New York is, that's for sure.
New York is more north.
Yeah.
So the sun would go down quicker below the horizon or slower?
I think in some latitudes Atlanta.
Huh? It'll get darker quicker or longer? Longer. Longer, because since the earth has more of a curve, more light will come up. There, the more you get to the equator, the quicker you're losing the sun's rays, because the earth bulges. So as the sun goes below the horizon, the bulge of the earth will block the sun's rays. However, if you're latitude, that's why the more north pole you are, more north you are, the more light there is. The sun doesn't set so well. So that's, in other words, in New York City, it'll take more time for the light to disappear than it would in Israel.
So
it means Bein Hashmashos is longer. That's why we're machmir for 18 minutes. We say not 13 and a half or 12 like the Gemara says. We say 18 because we have a problem with latitude. Huh?
It's a problem with the circumference of the earth at different latitudes. So you have to, it has to do a revolution every 24 hours. And the lower it closer to the equator, the greater the circumference. So I guess the more speed it has to travel in 24 hours.
Right.
And you go up higher, and then it's less of the circumference. So 24 hours it has to go.
So things take longer. Okay, good. It's another way of explaining it. So that's why in America, New York, we say Bein Hashmashos is 1 mil. Ivy Gemara said it's only 3/4 of a mil. 2/3 of a mil. What's the answer? The answer is latitude travel. So, if you want to be very precise, it probably won't be really 18 minutes. 18 minutes is adding a huge amount. It's adding from 13 to 18. It's almost a third. So, you're adding a lot. So, it's probably maybe a few minutes, not really the whole thing. But, in order to be machmir, not to get into this whole problem, so we say 18 minutes is Bein Hashmashos. We're going to be machmir for 18 minutes. But even more than that, they wanted to take us in New York City beyond the 18 minutes, and they want to take us up to 30 minutes.
Who?
The rabbis.
Oh, it's why?
Yeah, because the rabbis aren't even sure that 18 minutes works. They claim it might even be really 24.
Why doesn't it have Yerushalayim 40 minutes? They
no, no, Yerushalayim is 18 minutes. 18 minutes. So let me explain what's going on. There's also an Indian here of Tosefah Shabbos. Besides the actual suffix that you don't want to do Melacha Matzah Shabbos before it's really night, you want to make sure you finish Moshe's is finished. You also want to make people have Tosefas. There's a mitzvah device to be Mosif Mechol Al HaKadosh. So what they did in America was like they said, American Jews are not bright. They're very stupid Jews. We have to make things very simple for them. The simplest thing we'll do is like this. We're going to make them light the candles Friday 18 minutes before Bein HaShemashes. So let's say you say candle lighting, Bein HaShemashes, you say, let's say it's 5 o'clock. When do we put in the calendar to light the candles? You can't tell American Jew light at 5 o'clock. He will light at 5 o'clock. It'll be Machal Shabbos. He'll light at 5:01, 5:02. It's already too late. Give him enough time. So make it 18 minutes before. So 1 mil before Shkia, we put on our calendars candle lighting. So let's say Shkia is 5 o'clock. What time is candle lighting? 4:42. Then we start like this. When is Shabbos over? Well, in Israel, it's 18 minutes after Shkia, end of Bein HaShemashos. 13 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever. But American Jews, they don't. And anyway, you want to have Tosefas. So, we're going to make it very easy. You light candles 4:42, Shabbos ends 5:42, an hour later. An hour later. Why? Because the whole finished mushes begins at 5 o'clock. Let's say you take latitude and all of this stuff into consideration. It's 5:24. You have Tosefa Shabbos, another few minutes, it's 5:30. Meanwhile, he lit candles 4:42. You're going to tell him, light candles 4:42 and make Shabbos over 5:30. It's too confusing. He's stupid. He's very stupid. You can't tell him light candles at 4:42 and make Abdullah 5:30. It's too confusing for him. And anyway, all these are on 12 minutes. So we tell him light candles 4:42 and make Abdullah 5:42. Every American Jew should know one thing. When you light candles. And then Shabbos ends 1 hour later. That's what we tell them. That's when you'll be a rabbi, Mr. Shem, in your shul. That's what you tell the people. 1 hour, not a second before. Either going to be a big Daf Yomi man in your shul, and he learned Daf Lamed Dalet and Lamed Hey and Shabbos, and he comes and says, Rabbi, this is very strict. You don't have to make a whole hour. It's only 13 minutes, the Gemara says. 12 minutes. How come you're throwing in so much time? Say, Daf Yomi is very good, but when it comes to halacha, I'm the rabbi. Not 1 second before an hour after candle lighting can you go to your car to go to the latest movie. No, you come late to the movie. You stay 1 hour after candle lighting is when we're going to make we're going to daven Mariv. We're not going to finish Mariv before a second of an hour after candle lighting. This is Minig America. All the Rabbanim in America have agreed not to end Shabbos 1 second before an hour. At least an hour after candle lighting. And candle lighting is 18 minutes before the Shkia. This is safe. Now I know that my people are not going to be Mechal Shabbos. If I tell them anything else, wow, you'll see what's going to happen. No, the show started. I have to run to the show. Chas v'shalom. We only allow ending Shabbos 1 hour, full hour after candlelight. That's the takana of all the Orthodox rabbis in America, and that's the way it is. Yerushalayim is a different story. The way they do Yerushalayim is different. Yerushalayim, they say end Shabbos much earlier. Yerushalayim, they only wait 45 minutes or so. But don't forget about Yerushalayim. You're not living in Yerushalayim.
Flying Jews are better than us. They're able to figure things out better. We're stupid Americans. Americans are so stupid, we have to keep a full hour after camp lighting and not stop a minute before. Forget from Schlein. Schlein is no rabbi.
Rabbi, this is a spirit. On one hand, we're saying that American Jews are not intelligent, and therefore we have to make matmir for an hour after. On the other hand, a balabas, who probably contextually falls into the category of stupid based on the purpose of discussion, he's the one figuring out the Yerushalayim time.
He's a computer programmer, and he knows all the ins and outs of the program.
And the rabbis are being mocked for the time it's supposed to be for the stupid people. So what are we insinuating about the people who want to extend Shabbos an hour? We're saying that the people who are too dumb to figure it out.
No one can, because this is already, no. This has become a minig America. Don't explain it to them. Don't explain it. Just say, this is the way all the rabbis decided. Finish. Why? It's beyond that. Don't explain it to them. Because they might get insulted if you tell them the real reason.
I thought there was a
different
New York,
it was like 40 minutes. 1 hour after Lech Benchen. That's 40 minutes after Shkia.
Which rabbis agreed to this?
All the rabbis.
The Hasidic rabbis?
The Hasidic rabbis, the non-Hasidic, all the Orthodox rabbis in New York agreed to wait 1 full hour after candle lighting. Which is 40 minutes after. It's been this way since the first calendar was published around the year 1910. They published the first calendar in New York. So it's about 100-year-old minhag.
I thought they made it different from New York than other
places. I don't know what they do in Chicago. This is New York. New York is 1 hour. Finish. No one should stop Shabbos before an hour.
Every 72 minutes.
I'll come to the 72 minutes. We're not ready for that yet. Yes, Hashem, by the time we're finished, you'll keep Shabbos like me.
For
not just 1 hour after candle lighting, 2 hours after candle lighting. That's the goal. The goal is to convince you to keep for 2 hours after candle lighting. But first we start with 1 hour. 1 hour, no ifs, no buts. That's it. Now we'll move on. We'll go to 1.5 hours. We'll go to 2 hours. It's a sham. By the time we're finished, we'll keep 2 hours Shabbos.
The yeshiva itself, the base medrash sets the time 1 hour after candle lighting, I believe.
No, the base medrash. Base medrash goes now 1 hour and 20 minutes after candle lighting.
So the annex minion that's been started.
Annex
that's
is early.
An hour after.
That's an hour. The annex is 1 hour.
1 hour.
So that weren't.
We go much more in the base medrash. We'll come to it next time. Tomorrow we'll discuss it.